Music from the baritone who was just a kid when super producer David Foster asked him to sit in for none other than Andrea Bocelli during a big Los Angeles performance. And a star was born. Josh Groban there. And Josh is one of the many artists covered in the new film, David Foster Off the Record. And the documentary is screening at the Toronto International Film Festival this week. And so with that, you're with the Thursday edition of The Oasis here on the New Classical FM. My name is Mark Wigmore. Let's get to our daily look at arts and culture.
My goal when I go in the studio with a singer is I believe in my head that I'm going to get a better vocal out of this singer than he or she has ever done before or ever will do again.
So there's a moment from David Foster Off the Record, a revealing and personal profile of Grammy Award-winning composer and producer David Foster, with interviews from the artists who know the music legend best. And that list includes Celine Dion, Josh Groban, Barbara Streisand, Chicago, Lionel Richie, Quincy Jones, and Michael Bublé. Foster is one of the most successful record producers and songwriters of the last 50 years. In the doc, we find out about his Victoria, BC roots, his tough times overseas as a young pop artist, his move to LA, and his rise to fame, but also his philanthropic side, his many marriages and families, and his tough demeanor in the studio and in business settings. The man to tell the story is none other than acclaimed filmmaker Barry Abrich. His incredible body of work includes Blurred Lines, his last documentary, Quality Balls, the David Steinberg story, Showstopper, the theatrical life of Garth Drabinsky, and The Reckoning, Hollywood's worst kept secret. It's my pleasure to welcome Barry Abrich to the New Classical FM.
Hi, Mark.
Really wonderful to have you here, sir. And, you know, you love a mogul, you love a power player, and you've done it again here. But just looking back, Drabinsky, Weinstein, Bob Guccione, and David Foster now. Why David added to this mix?
I don't know that David wants to be in the same company as Bob Guccione.
That's true.
I knew of David Foster. I love the music. I, like anybody else who sees this film, will be completely surprised at the body of work and how many artists. I didn't know that he's the guy behind Chicago, Earth, Wind, and Fire. I mean, you keep going. And
so true. I mean, once you see it all laid out like that, it's
astounding.
It's
great
ridiculous
storytelling. Whitney Houston, I mean, the making of I Will Always Love You. I mean, you know, we screened it the other night at the film festival, a packed audience. People applauded after that segment because it's just such a beautiful story.
It is so beautiful. Yeah.
The project was brought to me. I was in the middle of doing Prosecuting Evil, about a 99-year-old Nuremberg prosecutor. And this was just the right time to sort of look at David Foster's life. I was just completely blown away by it. We began a 2-year courtship to sort of find a rhythm together because he didn't know me. He could pick any producer or director he wanted.
Not to mention, just looking at this film, we realize his schedule is, it's out of control.
Insane. I mean, this film was such that usually I have a good trajectory of when and how I'm going to film various people, and you gang up interviews to make these things somewhat feasible.
Sure.
Not this. This was Monday.
Too many power players here.
Incredible. Yeah, Monday, you're going to Nashville to film Peter Cetera. On Thursday, you're going to go to Las Vegas to shoot Celine Dion at 4 in the morning. And then maybe when on the way back, you might get Lionel Richie. But that's, of course, protracted. We shot probably 25 people, you know, over a year and a half. So it's based on people's schedules.
It's a lot to unpack with this David Foster film, but something we're looking at again in one of your documentaries is a man who knows how to shift the levers of show business. He's really a big picture guy, and you convey that so perfectly in the film. And that was one of my big takeaways, is this guy thinks the cosmos.
Mark, when I did The Last Mogul about Lou Wasserman, David Brown, the great producer who did Jaws and The Sting, said that Lou Wasserman, who ran Universal Studios, had the entire equation of Hollywood in his head. David is the same thing, but when it comes to music, he is a showman. He is a composer. He's a performer. He's a producer. He does get the whole sense of the business.
Multi-instrumentalist, as we learned.
Multi-instrumentalist.
Yeah, right.
Taught classically. He really understands, I mean, that all of that is in his head. And he's very, as we show in the film, he's extraordinarily fast. This is a man who does not labor over anything too long. And I felt a kinship with him on that. If I'm working on a documentary and I'm not feeling the sense of it or the story or the rhythm, I abandon. He's the same way, but he's just so prolific.
He says at the beginning of the doc that he's going to be breathing down your neck for the entire making of the film. Did that end up being the case?
You know, he did breathe down my neck, but not in an intrusive way creatively. We respected each other's boundaries. I mean, he saw the film once. He had if he had any notes, it was about accuracy. It wasn't about style, which was shocking to me because, again, I have no background in music whatsoever. But yet, you know, it's 38 songs in the film. They had to be mixed brilliantly. They had to be edited perfectly. So the first time I showed him the film contractually with no right to make any changes, which is what we agreed on.
Wow.
My only way going in, I stood with him in a little dark theater, and I was trembling and nervous. And I said to him, you know, David, I'm extraordinarily nervous. And he said, so am I. And we just sort of shared that because, you know, he was just as nervous looking at his life. So he did not bring down my neck at all. I mean, as he has said, he knew the rules going in, and there's tough stuff in the film about his family and marriages.
Let's stick with the music for a moment. Yes. Celine Groban, Quincy Jones in there, Buble, Andrea. I think the sections on Chicago, you mentioned Chicago, they play an important role at the beginning of the film. And then Whitney Houston, as you mentioned, probably the most fascinating for me just because you see just the level of what had to happen. I mean, David's involvement with Chicago was that he transformed their career, but at the same time, it was difficult for the band. And then with Whitney, just big decisions being made on what would become an iconic song. Just unbelievable moments in the film.
Unbelievable. And, yeah. And you know, again, I think it was Diane Warren, you know, Oscar-winning, Grammy Award-winning songwriter, who said that, you know, David imagines a standing ovation in everything that he writes.
Right.
And if you listen to that music from I Will Always Love You to the, you know, the Earth, Wind, and Fire, everything seems to have a standing ovation, and it's true.
It does. He was part of several reality shows, and
yes.
Some say not his greatest decision in his career. Did you know that was going to be a part of the film from the get-go, that you were going to include
Well,
that?
It had to be.
Right.
I mean, it's part of that, you know, the story. And again, you know, David and I talked a lot about this before we started shooting, about what we were going to include in the film. And, the biggest debate we had was whether or not we were going to shoot Catherine McPhee, you know, now his wife. At the time he was engaged, and he was very nervous about, you know, what if it doesn't work out, and, you know, and what am I going to look like?
The track record's not amazing.
No,
for that
fifth
sort of
wife.
Right.
You know, he's a runner, as he says in the film. But the reality stuff, Mark, was had to be in there. I mean, David can't say no. You know, his schedule is insane, whether it's fundraising, whether it's, you know, showing up for someone else's benefit or as in gala benefit. He just can't say no. So if somebody said, let's do a reality show, he'll say, okay.
What surprised you about him once you were finished with the project? I know it's been fresh this week. You've been back together with him.
I have. I think the most surprising thing is that he honestly thinks that, number one, that his music will not stand the test of time. Well, this is a man who, again, whose greatest influences were, you know, Mozart and Beethoven and Bach. Which have, and he doesn't see himself anywhere in that, and you know, and music purists would never say his music is, but he doesn't believe the music will sustain itself forever, and also that he doesn't think that the artists of today would have any interest in working with him, and he's wrong.
Yeah, we do see that vulnerability a little bit in this film, and you capture some of that. You know what? You are the right man for this job, and congrats again. And last we talked, it was Blurred Lines, and I just love that film so much. Everything you do, I'm always so thrilled to talk to you. So congratulations on this David Foster film.
You're a good man.
The final screening of David Foster, Off the Record, at TIFF is this Saturday, September 14th at the Scotiabank Theater. Get up, 9:15, and where does it go from here, Barry?
It'll be Cineplex. Across the country, October 16th, and then it'll be on Crave.
Wonderful. I have Crave, so we'll enjoy that streaming, and let's listen to another artist who figures prominently in the doc, Andrea Bocelli.